Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. Star architect or down to earth?
Down to earth.
Design or functionality?
Design.
Typically Belgian, fries or chocolate?
Chocolate.
The Belgian practice, Bureau for Architecture, Scenography, Interior and Landscape, or BASIL for short, views architecture as more than just an aesthetic discipline. It is a subtle, boundary-crossing exploration of what truly matters. This approach starts with a practical analysis of the needs and desires of the people who will inhabit the spaces they design, culminating in a combination of contemporary art, performance, and architecture. For BASIL, architecture must be more than just beautiful images. It must create space in which everyone feels comfortable living, working, and spending time. BASIL believes that too little thought is given to the powerful influence architects can have on the experience of a building. After all, it is the architect's design that determines how a space is entered, how one moves through it, what views it offers, and how much it fosters a sense of calm, creativity, or belonging. But what truly constitutes great architecture? How can it calm, inspire, and create an atmosphere that welcomes and embraces people? And why is it so important to take the technical foundations of a building as seriously as the aesthetic design? In today's Jung podcast, we, Diane Slavich and David Lannoy, explore these questions and the underestimated power of architecture, as well as the pursuit of spaces that not only function, but also have a soul.
Hello, and welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. Nice to have you with us.
Hello.
In this podcast, we first need to take a look back into the past. You mentioned in your pre-conversation that you already knew you wanted to become an architect at the age of 6. What inspired you so much at that young age?
It's very difficult to say exactly. One of the things that I can remember is, as a child, my father was an electrician. So I often go with him on site while he was working. I was just strolling around on the site. And the main thing I can still remember is the smell of fresh plaster. I was really fascinated. Even now, it does something with me. And I think that was the trigger for me to do something with building, but more in like a design kind of way. I always was fascinated also as a child, walking around in like these rough construction sites and being able to imagine what was going to be the end result. I think it was that made it for me.
Did you put it already on paper when you were a child, those images in your head?
Yes, I was constantly drawing houses, but I wouldn't recommend looking at those drawings again. At that time, they were very classical, as far as I remember, really typical Flemish cottage style, not a thing that we do these days anymore, but it was always kind of finding a dialogue between aesthetics and materials, actually, even at that age.
And did you, growing up and starting to become an architect, have some role models for you or your firm?
I was always intrigued in architecture worldwide. We all know the most famous names, so I don't have to repeat them. So there were the classical names, but I know when I was like 12 years old, when you go to school, primary school, and then you have to go to high school, you always have like these educational advices. And I know at that point, I said to the person in front of me, I want to become an architect. And I still remember that the person said, yeah, you better forget about it because it's never going to happen. So at that point, my dream kind of fell apart. But then at the age of 14, my best friend was going to change schools and he was going to study in Ghent at St. Lucas. I didn't know what St. Lucas was at that time, And I just said to him, yeah, I'm going with you, because he was my best friend. So I asked for the information sheet about the school. And the moment it fell into the mailbox, I saw they had like this architecture education. And I think the week afterwards, I already inscripted me for the next year to go and study architecture. And the thing is, my friend never ended up at St. Lucas. But for me, it was like a new world. And I was able at the age of 15 of doing something with architecture. And it was really nice for me, because the years before, school was always like difficult, an obligation. And from that point on, everything went, yeah, by itself. It was just like a dream come true.
What a wonderful story. So when you speak about the underestimated power of architecture, what exactly do you mean by that?
I think that people in general really underestimate the power that an architect has in a sense of creating space, directing how people are going to use or experience a building. It can be their own house or an office building, in a way that the architect is going to create or divide spaces in a way that we are going to say in the morning, if you're going to have sunlight in the bathroom, if you're going to have light in general, you can design a house without windows. So that is the power that an architect has. And I think that very few people take notice of that power. And it's also something that we can use and we can play with as an architect. Not in a dominant way. That's my vision on architecture. You always have to listen to the client, and you always have to create buildings for the client or for certain people that are going to use the building. But you can play with that power. And I think it's always interesting when you have like an assignment, a client in front of you, to look for the deeper purpose, the deeper wishes that they have, to find the right instruments, techniques to create the space even better than they would have dreamt of.
There is a famous quote attributed to Winston Churchill, and he said, "We shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us." How do you think this manifests in your observations and in your projects?
Actually, I'm a little bit embarrassed because I didn't hear the quote before, but I think I'm going to use it from now on. Yeah, it's true. I think that, as I said, we have the power to create spaces and the use of space as an architect, but it's also that the building can have the power to create how you're going to feel even. So the building can, in that way, create the mindset of a people. Yeah, for sure.
You've already mentioned before how important the conversation with your client is to realize a good project. So how does the dialogue with the client work in your practice? What is particularly important to you in that process?
Everything starts with communication. We are very lucky at our daily practice that we have more questions from potential clients than we have time to do all those projects. So we can be very selective. So that's the first thing. There needs to be a very good connection with our clients. And every project that we take on needs to have like a trigger for us. Otherwise, we don't start. That's one of the main things, I think. And then second thing is, yeah, when you feel that there is a connection, it's just like a questionnaire that we go through. It can be all kinds of things. It could be that you're just talking about flowers or such, but the way that people react on some small details, small questions, you already know what's important for them. I always remember when I started architecture at university, we also had like philosophy and psychology in the studies. And I always wondered, oh, why is that necessary? But actually, it's a tool that you use every day more than once. So it's really important. And I think communication is the main thing. It starts with communication to know what are the desires, the wishes, the habits, the needs of your client. And further on in the project, yeah, communication is very important to create the building that you envisioned. And also very specific for our daily practice is that I'm not doing this myself. So when we receive a client, I'm never alone. So we're at least with the two of us, me and my partner, Lorenzo. And that also gives different insights. It already happened that clients say, I would prefer to work with Lorenzo rather than with you because there is a better connection. Yeah, there's no problem with that because it's normal. It's human, I think.
You've said once that we just create the base. The rest comes from the client. If I think about some designers, that might sound like a nightmare for them. How do you actually put that into your practice?
It's always dangerous giving freedom to a client. It could become a nightmare. I think it already starts there with the first screening, the first discussions. You really have to search if the connection is on the same level. A few years ago, we had a client and there was a really good connection with a male client, but with the female, there was no connection at all. And it was really difficult in a way because even the two, it was like black and white. There was no gray in between. So at the end, we just thanked the client for the project and we didn't do it because we knew out front that it wouldn't work. One of both of them wouldn't be happy with the end result. So you need to be very critical in that. And then for the rest, it's very important that you keep the thoughts and the wishes of the client in mind. But of course, as a designer, as an architect, we have our own vision and point of view. So you have to soften both of them and create something that works perfectly for both. But it's always dangerous when you go on the designing path and you start dreaming and then comes the first breaking point is the budget. And then you need to do some adjustments. And yeah, it's always dangerous that you lose the main thoughts of the design. So it's very important to keep the design point of view and the end results connected with each other.
Speaking about budgets, you shared a great line in our pre-conversation. It was, we have to be creative with budgets. Out of these limitations comes the clarity, the precision, and aesthetic that so fascinates us about Belgian architecture. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think in a way it's typically Flemish or Belgian in general that we look a lot at the architecture that is going on around the globe, especially Swiss architecture and such. But there is a very big difference between Swiss architecture and Belgian architecture, and that is for the main thing, budget. So we want to create the same detailed designs and materials, but the budget of the clients are mostly not aligned with that point of view. So it's very important indeed to be very creative. And also there, the dialogue with the contractors, with the people who need to build it, is very important so that you can optimize the design with the reality.
You don't design only architecture. You also design furniture and interiors. Why is this matching so important to you? I think it can help cost-wise, but what is the main reason for this?
I think for one thing, cost-wise, it's not always interesting from our part because often people have a separate budget for the interior and the architecture. And as we combine them, there is only one budget. So I don't think if that's the most interesting thing. But for me, actually, it's not a question. It seems very evident that when you design a building, that you also do the interior because it's one thing. I see a building as a utility where you can enter, where you can live in, where you can work in. And the exterior needs to be beautiful and functional, of course, but mainly buildings are being used from the inside. So I don't see how you would design or create an architecture without thinking or even designing the interior.
As an interior architect, I can definitely agree.
The thing of even designing the furniture, because that's already a small step further, is just because, yeah, that's a finishing touch. And when you are able to design a table or a chair or a sofa for a client, in a way, that means that you did a good job and they trust you till the end. So it's nice to do.
So we absolutely have to talk about one topic, and that is color. You work very deliberately with color, often with like one color per project approach. So what fascinates you about that?
It's something that we discovered by coincidence, actually. We used color from the beginning, but it was never meant to be like a signature. It was just at a certain point that people started talking about it. And I think in a way, it just started because when you say that you're creating contemporary architecture, most people that are not involved with architecture on a daily basis or such, they all think that you're making like this very chill, cold, black and white interiors. And I think from the beginning, we just wanted to create contemporary architecture where it can be cozy and can be warm and can be nice to live in. I'm not saying that a white interior couldn't be nice. It's also a personal thing. But I think it started over there. And then it evolved during time that the color became a subject on its own. And now it became a thing that for most projects, indeed, we are looking for one specific color to use. And it's also related to the site. It can be a color that is involved with the environment or even in contrast with the environment or just the color that the future owner likes. It can be different causes, but also we are trying to never use the same colors in different projects, which becomes harder every day because at a certain point, you used a lot of colors. Yeah, that's a challenge for the future for sure. Yeah.
But there are so many shades of colors.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true. We can do different shades of gray or something.
But how do you find the right balance between like using color and also some white and some true materials like wood or concrete and have the right amount of everything?
I think this is going to sound very cliche, but even today, less is more. So even when we use a color for accents, the thing there is already, we just use one color. So when we, for instance, are going to use bright orange, then we are going to use it for the door handles, for the switches, even for the kitchen. But it just stays the orange. And then we combine it just with like a basic gray or a basic white. And when we do like basic gray, we are going to combine it with a natural concrete so that the main palette stays very soft and not noisy. I think that's the main thing. And even when you choose different kinds of materials like wood, concrete, you just have to make a connection between them in shades so that the color that you use is still the accent and not the other materials. I think that's the case for our projects.
It's a very strong decision to do so because if I look at your projects, it's very obvious that it's Basil Architects who did it. So it's this main idea. It's also very recognizable and seems to be kind of a USP from your side, which is very nice, I would say. It's a very smart idea.
It's not that we're saying it needs to look like that because that's our signature. We always say we don't have like a signature or way of designing, but it just became our signature. And we also have something with folded roofs. I can't deny that.
Hence the new office.
But there's so much more about a folded roof than just a plain flat roof. I can't deny it. It gives more space, more atmosphere.
Absolutely. Well, we're already coming to the end of our discussion. And to conclude our podcast, we always have a personal question to our guests. Which contemporary building would you like to have colored?
As a student, or even before I was studying architecture, I think I was like 16 years old. I was a big fan, and still am, of Eames. And the Eames House, even today, is an icon for me. I think there it started also for me the passion for steel architecture. And then in my last year of secondary school, I did a project on Vitra because of Eames. And then I started to know Zaha Hadid with the fire station on the Vitra site. And I think I would choose that project, the firehouse of Zaha Hadid.
Oh, that might be interesting.
Yeah, because even today, for me, that is the most typical Zaha Hadid project and the most beautiful one. So I would choose the Zaha Hadid fire station, even though it's all gray, all concrete. Maybe, yeah, in that way, it could use some color. It's also something that I'm still processing today, because for now, we're still quite soft in our architecture, doing horizontal, vertical combinations of walls. And one of the main things I want to do is something more futuristic, playing with forms.
We're looking forward to.
Yeah, me too.
As your story is really amazing, how early you started already with your passion about architecture. Is there any message you would like to tell our young listeners, the upcoming architecture and interior design students?
I think the only thing that I could say is if you have a passion for architecture or design, or it could be anything, any passion at all, just follow it and don't listen to the possible wrong advices that people give you. Because it could be at the point that you're being evaluated that some grades or such are not good enough to do a certain direction of studies. But it's always so when you can do something from a passion, that's a different case. You have like this urge, this energy that gives you freedom to do everything that you want. I'm convinced of that. So just follow the passion and everything will be fine.
That's a great advice, Robert.
Fantastic. Well, that was a fantastic end of our discussion. I hope the young upcoming architects and designers will follow your message. Thank you very much for the insights, for your time, your inspiring words. And for us, it's time to say goodbye already. Until the next episode of the Jung Talks podcast.